the scene from Sears Radio Theater, which will be brought to you Monday through Friday on this station. Today, Cicely Tyson will enthrall you with a tale of love and hate, a drama involving human emotion. Tomorrow, Richard Widmark will host tales of adventure in outer space, under the sea, anywhere there is adventure. Monday, you'll hear stories of the Golden West and the West we know today, with Lorne Greene as your host. Tuesday, you can laugh with Andy Griffith as your host for things that are funny. And on Wednesday, Vincent Price will bring you a generous helping of mystery, suspense, and detective stories. The Sears Radio Theater will begin after this message from your local station.
This is Cicely Tyson. It's a winter afternoon on a residential street in one of those little commuter towns on the Long Island Railroad. In the front window of a corner house, a man sits alone, unmoving, staring out at something. Is it the railroad station nearly two blocks away? Inside the house, we can see that the man at the window is sitting in a wheelchair. There's a much-used drawing board on his lap with a blank sheet of paper on it. The tools of an artist all around him in the room, which is a sort of studio. We can also see that the man is not alone. There's a young dog with him, a black and tan dachshund, looking at his right hand, which swings limply at the side of the wheelchair. The man is crying. You can see the tears running down his face.
What happened to me at the station that day? I can't walk anymore. I can't use my right arm. I can't draw anymore. I can't do anything. Why did this happen to me? Why is that damn little dog licking my hand like that? Why?
And that's how we begin our story.
Sears Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. Brought to you 5 nights a week by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops. Your host,
Lorne Greene. I'll bring you stories of the Old West and the New.
Andy Griffith with a look at the funny side of life.
Vincent Price with tales of mystery and suspense.
Cicely Tyson with stories about love, hate, and related things.
Richard Widmark. I'll bring you stories of pure adventure.
5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis production of The Sears Radio Theater. Our story, Hildy, by Ted Sherdeman. Our star, Fletcher Markle.
The man in the wheelchair slowly, painfully, makes himself remember. Forces himself back to a happier time, a healthy and productive time.
It began in the late summer at our Long Island house, where I lived with my wife, Joan, and our 12-year-old red dachshund, Sam. I was a commercial artist who worked at home and spent most of my time, when I wasn't with clients or ad agency people, in my studio, which was my pride and joy. Close at hand, napping as usual, was Sam. I just finished pasting up some type sheets on an ad when the phone rang. You get that, Joni?
Okay.
Uh-oh. Another plant needs some thinner. This one little problem, we seem to be out of thinner.
It's Barry Mills from Los Angeles, Eddie. Pick up the phone in your studio.
Hello?
Hi, Eddie. How are you?
Fine, Barry. How are you? And what are you doing calling me all the way across the country?
Lydia and I are going to England.
Hey, how about that? Did you hear that, honey?
Hear what?
She's right beside me now, Barry. They're going to England.
Oh.
What happened? Smog get too bad for you?
My agent sold me to an English producer, and we'll be gone the better part of a year, I guess.
Hey, that's wonderful. In London?
Yeah, part of the time. What I was wondering, do you still like dachshunds?
Doxies? Sure. Wouldn't have any other breed of dog.
Well, Lydia and I feel the same way, but Hildy is the problem.
Ooh, who's Hildy?
A doxy.
Oh.
She's only three, and she'd die in a kennel here. And there's an English law about bringing dogs into their country. They're kept in quarantine for 6 months. That's why I've thought of you and your love, your and Joni's love for dachshunds.
Well, sure,
would you take Hildy? All we want is somebody to love her, and we won't ask to have her back when we get home. Would you do it, Eddie?
Well, I don't know, Barry. We've got Sam.
Now, please, but... Eddie, Lydia and I would love to go to England, but we won't go if we can't find a decent home for Hildy. Will you take her?
Just a minute, Barry. Did you hear that? What do you think?
Well, we've been talking about getting a spare around when, Sam dies.
Barry, you won't ask for her back.
No, honest, we won't. Is it a deal?
Well, I guess so. I'm not coming out there to get her.
No. We'll put her on a plane. She'll be there tomorrow. Lydia and I are flying direct from here to London.
How about shots and stuff? Has the dog had a rabies shot?
Everything works and up to date. I'll send everything in the mail to you. Hildy will be there tomorrow.
Okay, Barry, we'll pick her up.
Thanks, Eddie. You've taken a load off our minds. Goodbye.
Bye. Well, guess we've got another dog, whether we want one or not.
Sam will hate it.
He'll get used to her.
He'll have no choice. Will you, Sam?
Come on, Joni. Up, Hildy.
I guess you'll eat whatever Sam eats, huh?
Sure. Here you are, driver.
Thanks, Mac.
Come on, Hildy. This is your new home. Making a club to help you in the dog fight.
With a rolled up newspaper?
You better be prepared.
Look out. There's Sam.
Huh? They only sniffed noses, and there goes Hildy inside.
Sam, be patient with Hildy. She only wants to explore her new home.
The dog expects to find her old owner somewhere.
Look at Sam. He's curled up and gone back to sleep. Couldn't care less about Hildy being here.
Where's she?
Like you said, looking for her old owner. Hey, what is this? Hildy's registered in the American Kennel Club as Brunhilde of Westwood.
Mm. Go fetch the ball, Hildy. That's a good girl. And give it to me. Now sit up and I'll throw it again. Good girl. Fetch.
Well, she's had all her shots. Says here, not due for another rabies shot for nearly 2 years. And I'm not throwing the ball for you, whether you sit up or not.
At least he doesn't sit up and beg while we're at the table like Sam used to.
Good old Sam. Look at him. Sound asleep.
Come look at her. Curled up beside him to keep him warm.
I hope he makes it to Christmas. He'll be 13 then.
I hope it's not an unlucky number for him.
Look at all the snow, Hildy. It'll be a white Christmas for sure.
Daddy?
I'm in the living room.
Come here.
I was just showing Hildy the new snow. What's the problem? Sam. Sam?
I think he's dead.
Sam?
I came back to the bedroom to find out why he hadn't shown up in the kitchen for his breakfast he always did before, and... Oh, Eddie, we knew he was old and that it had to happen.
He didn't make it to Christmas. Sam's death taught us one thing, that you can't prepare for such an event. It doesn't matter whether it's all of a sudden or long in coming. There's no way to keep from remembering all the things you could have done, maybe should have done, but didn't. But like all things, dismal as they may be, a little time worked its wonder. And I got back to work at my drawing board. Joni was a perfect housewife, and Hildy was a perfect pet.
You have to deliver that artwork in person?
I always have.
But it snowed so heavily last night. I don't know whether you can even get through to the station.
I've waded through snowdrifts before. Right, Hildy?
It's still snowing, see?
Don't worry about it.
I don't worry about it. I worry about you. Bundle up carefully.
Am I okay? Can I go now?
Be careful.
Always am. Bye.
Bye, Hildy.
My train.
Watch it with the elbows, mister.
Wait for me. Wait a minute.
What's that?
What? Oh, wait a minute. He must have slipped on something. Is he alive? Somebody better call an ambulance.
Where?
I don't care. We'll just call. This guy is hurt bad.
Is he
unconscious? No, man. He's just curled up to take a nap in his own blood.
Hey, all I get is that stuff.
I call for an ambulance. You find out who he is?
No, not yet. I'm just trying to find out who he is, lady. Here. His name's Edward Gaskin.
Well, he'll be dead on arrival if that ambulance don't get here soon.
The snow reddening with his blood. Other commuters crowded around, some of them frightened. Others wanted to give help, but not knowing what to do. At last, the ambulance came and took him away.
Of course, I have no memory of how I got to the hospital, but somebody phoned Joan, and she came right away. I was in a recovery room when she finally saw the surgeon.
You are Mrs. Gaskin?
Yes. How's my husband? Is he all right?
Sit down, please.
I don't even know what happened to him.
Well, according to witnesses, he was running to catch a train and ran full steam into one of those steel girders on the platform.
Oh, God.
He did quite a job on his head, Mrs. Gaskin.
Go on.
But he's alive and will recover eventually.
What do you mean, eventually?
Just that.
When can I see him?
In about a week.
A week?
Mrs. Gaskin, I'm not sure. That's why I've asked some other neurologists to see him. But I'd be less than honest if I didn't tell you that your husband may be paralyzed on his right side and unable to speak.
Oh. Oh. Why did this have to happen to Eddie? Oh. I want to see him.
You can't see him for quite a while. So I suggest you go on home.
How long will he have to stay here, in the hospital?
It's anybody's guess, but figure several months.
What do you mean by several?
It's up to the neurologists and staff.
Will he need more operations?
Possibly. Look at it this way, Mrs. Gaskin. Your husband could have been killed. He's still alive.
What will he want to be if he's paralyzed and unable to speak?
That's up to him. And you.
I finally saw Eddie on the sixth day. But I don't think he even knew who I was. The doctors still weren't sure about his paralysis. But a neurologist was abrasively sure Eddie would overcome the aphasia and get some sort of voice back. I spent hours waiting for some sign of recognition. Every day I visited him at the hospital, going home only to feed Hildy and then spending sleepless nights with her worrying about Eddie. It was 6 weeks before he smiled at me. You're smiling at me. I'm your Joni. Hildy misses you. I miss you. And pretty soon, you'll be at home in your own studio again. Oh, don't stop smiling. Please, don't stop.
It's awful to think of words you are unable to say. Like a bad dream, but worse. To hear how I'll be in my own studio, unable to do anything. Not with a paralyzed right side. How can I ever use an airbrush again? How can I paste up a headline? I can't even use a triangle or straight edge on a drawing board without two good hands. hands that work. Get rid of me, Joni. Get rid of me.
Be careful getting that wheelchair into the cab.
Here, let me help, man.
Thank you, driver.
There you be, sir.
You take care of yourself now, Mr. Gaston.
Sure, I will.
Here's the address of our home, driver.
Yes, ma'am.
See you. Take care of everybody.
Yep, you're on your way home from the hospital, Mr. Gaston.
What's the word?
Hildy's anxious to see you. And all of your friends have called, especially George Franklin. He can't wait for you to get home.
And enemies.
What?
People who are not crippled, eager to look at me, who it is.
It's temporary, Eddie. You've already got your voice back. In no time, it'll be as good as new. The speech therapist at the hospital was sure of it.
I don't make drawings with my voice.
Glad to see you, Eddie.
Get away from me.
Eddie, you hit her.
Wheel me inside.
Yes, sir.
Hildy, that's a good girl. He didn't mean it.
That's one way to stop a hysterical greeting I'm in the mood for.
Hildy wants some attention from you.
Keep her off my path.
Come here, Hildy. Get down now. I'll get the front door.
It's me. Is he home?
Hi, George. We just got here.
I brought my portable checkerboard. Thought he might like a game. Hi, Hildy.
I doubt it, but come on in.
Gotcha.
It's George Glassine, dear.
Hey, you look great.
Hello, visitor.
Well, George isn't a visitor. He's an old friend.
I brought the checkerboard. You want to play?
You can't go out.
I'm sorry, George.
Don't make excuses for me.
Maybe another time.
No time.
Come on, George. Like I told you, we just got home and he's tired.
Get out of here.
I didn't come over here to be insulted, Ed. When you decide you'd like some company, just phone me. What's the matter with him?
He's depressed and upset because, well, he'll never draw again. With the right hand and arm, at least.
But I meant it about Eddie. If and when he wants company, he can phone me. Bye, George.
Bye, George. And thanks for coming. And thanks for everything. I only told them I was taking the morning off to get you ready.
What?
I have to go to work.
What did you say?
I had to get a job. I was lucky to get it.
Doing what?
At the library. I stack books mostly, but sometimes I help the librarian out. She's a woman, too.
Quit.
What?
You heard me. Quit. The woman who have you working.
Listen, Eddie, do you have any idea how long you were hospitalized? How many operations?
The insurance covers it.
I'm trying to explain to you. The insurance is used up, Eddie. There are staggering medical bills, and we've got no more savings. I had to go to work.
Just to prove I'm not capable of supporting you.
I'm not trying to prove anything except how much I love you.
Prove it by quitting.
I get off at 6. Then I'll be right home.
You're going to this job?
Yes, Eddie.
Well, don't try to kiss me. Get out. Take that stupid dog out, too.
Okay. Come on, Yodi. I'll bring your lunch to the night table. Come on, Yodi.
Uh, seemed to get some kind of perverse satisfaction out of refusing to kiss Joni goodbye and ordering her and Hildy to get out. Finally came the day I contemplated suicide. Deliberately broke a water glass after I'd considered just where to slash my right wrist with the razor edge shard. Obviously, one could die from one cut wrist as well as two. It was just too barbaric to cut my throat and sever the jugular vein. Then I remembered my life insurance wouldn't pay off for suicide. Joni would be left with no money, the additional expenses of burying me, and a bloody mess in the bedroom. The real reason for not taking my life was that I didn't have the courage, or lack of it, to do it. All I got out of it was a long crying spell.
You shouldn't lie in bed all the time, Mr. Gaston.
Or where you suggest, Doc. I sometimes do a bucket wing.
Eddie.
Your wife has rented a wheelchair for you.
And I'm applying the rental on the payments to buy it.
Good. So use the chair. Want some help getting in
there? No. Not from you, Joan, either.
I'll see you out, Doctor.
Right. I recommend you at least try to use that chariot there, Mr. Gaskin.
Whether it was the doctor's advice or seeing that investment just standing there, I decided to try the wheelchair. But I refused to let Joan help me into it and waited until she left for work the next morning to try out the chariot, as the doctor had called it. I managed to get out of bed, hop once on my left leg, and fall.
Oh, leave me alone. Stop licking me. Just get out of the room.
I had a few falls, but by hopping on my left leg from one place to another, I finally reached the chair. I wheeled myself into the living room. I didn't dare wheel myself into the studio where I'd worked. It was too painful to even think of all the art activities I could no longer take part in. But I finally did. I wheeled myself into the studio where I'd spent so many years. I finally picked up a piece of charcoal with my left hand and, using the paper tape of the drawing board, tried to sketch the tree I could see from the window. My efforts were so crude, I had no heart to continue. All I'd read about the great Mexican artist, Jose Orozco, losing his drawing arm and gaining fame only after he'd learned to paint with his left arm, all that depressed me instead of inspiring me. I concluded his triumph over catastrophe was due to copious quantities of tequila. Specious reasoning, of course. We couldn't even afford a pint of the stuff. A six-pack of liter-priced beer would be cause for a celebration. And then I became aware of Hildy sitting up, holding her ball in her mouth.
You want to chase the ball? It's the only thing left I can do for you. Get it. Not the right hand, Hildy. This one. Will you stop pushing it into the dead hand? It's here. I'll show you. I'll drag this useless arm out of my lap where you can't get to it. Now, give me that ball in my good hand. That's fine. Good girl. Now. Well, don't just lie there. Go fetch the ball. Never made any difference to you which hand threw it or even when it was kicked. Okay. You won't chase it. I'm going back to bed.
Okay, I'll put the wheelchair beside your bed so you can get into it.
Don't bother.
But, Eddie, the doctor said...
I heard him.
I wonder why I take this abuse.
Abuse? From paralyzed husband?
You're determined to remain surly and unhappy. You're a spoiled brat wallowing in self-pity. I can't talk about anything that doesn't anger or depress you. You cost us our best friend, George Glassine. I'm sorry about the accident. And that you can't draw anymore. But you have your life.
What good is it?
It's as good or bad as you want it to be. Sylvie and I are fed up with you, Eddie. Either you change your attitude and realize that you have our love, or you can rot right where you are.
The dog barked. Joan looked around and found me wheeling the chair into the kitchen. She gaped with surprise.
Eddie, you're in a wheelchair.
I thought I'd join you in the kitchen for breakfast. Hi, Hildy.
I would have been glad to bring it to you in your room.
I know you would have. I've been thinking about our talk last night.
I'm sorry, Eddie.
Look, don't be. I have been acting like a spoiled brat. Forgive me.
Oh, yes. Forgive me for saying what I did.
You were right.
Oh, Eddie. I know it hasn't been easy for you.
So what? There has been. But there's no reason to take out my frustrations on you or Hildy. A confession. I tried out this wheelchair yesterday.
How did you manage to even get into it?
Well, it took some doing.
I'll put it next to the bed for you next time so it'll be real easy.
Well, the point is, I finally went into the studio. I can't draw with my left hand, but at least I'll try.
Oh, Eddie, I can't ask for anything more.
After you leave for work, I'm going to phone George Glassine and apologize.
Winter came early that year and seemed to go on forever. I kept on trying to draw with my left hand, but my efforts were like a child, far from the commercial gloss in which I'd made my way. While I sat in the wheelchair and drew, Hildy would push my paralyzed hand and arm back, pressing the ball into my dead fingers until she released it, and the ball would drop to the floor. She picked it up and repeated the performance over and over and over, not stopping until I dragged the useless arm onto my lap and held out my left hand to her.
I'll throw the ball for you if you put it in my good hand. This one. Right here, Hildy. Okay. I'll let this dead wing hang down again. You see? You push it back, Hildy, but you can't give life where there's none to give. Nobody can.
Oh, it's miserable outside.
Looks
miserable. I'm glad you're home.
I'm glad to be here. Hi, Hildy. The supermarket was so crowded. People were buying like eating. It had just been discovered. I got us a steak. Yes, Hildy, you'll get some real meat tonight.
She won't taste the ball anymore.
Well, what's the matter with you, Hildy? Here, now, puppy.
You threw it with your left hand, too.
A woman's touch.
Oh, here, Hildy, put it in my left hand. Percy, sure, do it.
Well, give it to me, Hildy. Good girl. Like I said, a woman's touch. Come on, Hildy, let's fix dinner. If this steak is tough, I am going to kill the butcher.
I was sitting by the front window watching the icicles melt and thinking spring might be trying to appear. Hildy was playing her repetitious game with my right hand. I looked at her. Her tail was wagging furiously. Then, with her nose, she nudged the right arm as far back as she could. Then she jumped aside. The arm swung forward, and I still held onto the ball. I could feel I was holding something in my hand. I tried to move the arm back, but felt nothing. Hildy nudged it back for me, then jumped aside. When it swung forward, I let loose of the ball and knew my fingers were beginning to work.
Oh, Hildy. Hildy, come up here. Hildy, come up on my lap so I can hug you.
You don't mind eating in the kitchen?
Not at all.
Here, Hildy, here's your bowl and the wire's right there. Well, why are you frowning? Did I do something wrong? You don't like barbecue chicken?
Not that.
It's what?
Well, why do you always put the spoon and fork on the left side of my plate? Can't you ever remember I'm right-handed? There's no knife to cut up the chicken with.
Well, it's already cut up for you and...
I carefully raised my right arm, picked up the fork in my right hand, awkwardly picked up some food, and spilled most of it as I tried to bring it to my mouth.
Eddie!
Now I'll have to learn to use this hand to feed myself all over again.
Oh, Eddie.
Not my doing. All the credit belongs to Hildy. Thank you again, Hildy.
Well, how did she do that? How did you? Oh, Eddie, I'm so happy.
She did it. Instinct, wisdom, whatever you want to call it, but something kept urging her to keep at this right hand with that ball. It wasn't just a game. She just seemed to know that if she did it long enough, I'd get this arm and hand back. And you know what else?
I only know I'm so grateful.
I'm going to call George Glassine tomorrow and start to go to the Y with him. Maybe my bad leg won't ever be as good as it was. But swimming can't hurt, and I'll feel like a whole man again.
Hildy's muzzle is quite with age now. She sleeps a lot, and Joni and I know there'll come a day when she won't be here to ever chase a ball again. But we're not getting a spare soften the blow after she's gone. Wouldn't be fair to the new dog. We'd always be making comparisons the poor creature couldn't live up to. There's just no way to replace somebody who gave you back your life.
to Sears Radio Theater, brought to you five nights a week by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops. Hildy was written by Ted Sherdeman, produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Your hostess was Cicely Tyson. Our star was Fletcher Markle. Also heard were Gene Howell, Lance Kolvig, Barney Phillips, Lou Krugman, Herb Rudley, and Linda Gary. The music for Sears Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. Mark Gilmore speaking. The Elliot Lewis production of Sears Radio Theater is a presentation of CDI,